Much and thanks to the organizers for inviting me here to this nice place. And maybe I spell out the title, which maybe was compressed due to excessive length. So it's on embedded resolution of singularities. For two-dimensional excellent schemes. And so this is very important. So this is work in progress. So joint work in progress. We are pretty sure that we can prove this, but let's be careful. With Vincent Cossard and Shuji Sato. So the point is to consider the following form of embedded resolution of singularities, which I already put down in a talk last week. So consider a statement. It's not a theorem. So let Z be a regular excellent scheme. Let YC be a strict normal crossings divisor on X. Okay, that's on Z. Excuse me. And let X in Z be a closed subscheme of dimension at most Q. So that's this Q here, such that X intersect with U is regular. I use the complement of the divisor of normal crossings. And then I'm interested in the following statements. Then there exists a projective morphism pi from Z prime to Z, such that it will automatically be surjective, because the following. So Z tilde, maybe I change notations because I want rather to call this so this is regular. And the inverse image of U is isomorphic to U. So it's not modified on U. And in particular, X is not modified at U. And Y prime, which is the total inverse image, the total transform of Y, is a simple normal crossing divisor on tilde. And last point, the proper transform, and I should not repeat the mistake from last week, so this should be non-empty. The proper transform x tilde of x under this it's in fact blowing up in tilde is regular and intersects Y prime transversely. So it's clear what it means is that two regular schemes intersect transversely, and a regular scheme intersecting normal, strict normal crossings divisor transversely means it intersects all the p-fold intersection for all p of the connected irreducible components of y prime transversely. Okay, so and why do I consider this statement? Again, I refer to last week. So, remarks. So first, so joined with Shuji Saito, we showed the following. So, if F is a finite field, X over F smooth and projective. So then this embedded resolution of singularities are ESQ for varieties over F only, together with Bloch-Kato conjecture on the bijectivity of the symbol map from Milner K theory mod L to Gallo homology. So for K Milner Q plus 2 of L modulo L, so mapping to a Gallo homology for all fields L over F. So that's just, of course, could also say for all finitely generated fields over F, but then you have the all, implies the bijectivity of the cycle or regulator map from motivic homology to etal homology, H2R minus S, motivic, which may with finite coefficients and any power of L, and the twist is R, and here you have etal homology. So for all S between 0 and Q, and all R which are at least D, which is the dimension of X, and all nu. Okay, so, and in particular, since this is known to be finite, one gets finiteness of motivic homology with finite coefficients for this L. So the Bloch-Kato conjecture, of course, is somehow in the works. At least it's known for L equals 2, by the work of Voivodsky. So for L equals 2, this you get this result. And I should also point out by taking the usual sort of thing, logarithmic Rambit sheets, this is also a theorem for L equals the characteristic P of F. Okay, so that's why this is maybe related to motivic homology on A1 homotopy. And there are similar results, similarly results for arithmetic schemes. So schemes which are regular and over flat over some number ring. But then we have to assume some conditions on semi-stable reduction and so on. Okay. And so that means this implies really a nice, this bijection and the finiteness of motivic homology. And second remark is consider the other variants of this resolution that you might be interested in. So I call this RESQ prime. So again, X. So X just an excellent integral scheme of dimension Q few. Here I want to forget about this ambient regular scheme Z. Why? Then by, okay, I'm write this a little bit vaguely, but successively blowing up X in regular centers, contained in the singular locus, one obtains a regular scheme. Okay, that means I do this, what I say here, and then to the blow up, I apply the same procedure. And it's claimed, this statement says that after doing this finitely many times, one gets a regular scheme. And of course, then one gets a proper morphism in the end, proper surjective, which does not modify in the regular locus and gets something regular, proper, and surjective. Actually, projective, if this is projective itself. Okay, so, and also the second version so X q-dimensional closed subscheme in Z, which is regular. Excellent. And Y, as before, Z, strict normal crossings divisor. Then by successively blowing up Z, but this also means at the same time blowing up X in regular centers, contained in, again, the singular locus of X, one obtains situation where the strict transform X tilde of X is regular, the full image, full transform, so just the inverse image of Y is again a strict normal crossings divisors, and X tilde and Y prime and Y prime intersect transversely. Okay, so then you see it already takes all these blackboards to write down what I want to consider. And one is far away from proving such thing, but let me first make some remarks. So obviously RES Q double prime implies RES Q, because we just modify outside the whole regular locus of X. And I think also the converse holds, basically, in good situations where you something have something like Bertini theorem and so on, but that's not so important. And implies also RES Q prime for schemes embeddable in regular schemes. So for example, for projective schemes over a field. One remark. And note, so also for the following, so for closed subschemes, M in X in Z, so that's like in our situation, for example, keep in mind that we maybe have something regular, something singular closed subscheme, and some locus that we want to blow up inside the singular locus of X. But this is quite general. We have the blow up of X in M, so no condition on regularity on anything. So this is a closed subscheme of the blow up of Z in M. And this is the strict transform of X, yeah, and the blow up of V. So that's why this clarifies why you have this, this and this. And then also, maybe also you need the following observation. So the second thing is that if X and Z, M and Z, are regular, then the blow up, so that's always the case, of something regular in something regular is a regular of the same dimension. So then this is an excellent situation. And so last remark here. So if n, again the situation, let's say if n of x is the normalization, which is the favorite process to desingularize of X, one does not, one usually does not know how to extend this closed immersion, so where this is regular, and here you take the normalization, to something, so this is a question somehow, with the tilde regular. Whereas as we see here, by blowing up in regular centers, we can achieve this. So in this embedded situation, the normalization of the closed subscheme X does not help at all. That's the point. And for many questions, this is not sufficient. So this implies, for example, the usual. So I mean, that's the problem with the sort of this discussion of resolution of singularities for two-dimensional schemes. If you tell this to the experts, then they say, well, this is known, right? I mean. But I mean, the usual process is desingularization of two-dimensional schemes, which is sort of an alteration of normalization and blow ups in points in isolated singularities. Does not help here in our for our purposes. Okay. So then, which maybe is not so surprising, is that one can prove this RES for Q equals one. So where this singular schemes occur. So let's just start this with this theorem. It's just working it out. RES Q prime and RES one double prime, and hence also the original RES one hold. And so, in fact, can achieve everything by successively blowing up the curve, which is now a curve, maybe an arithmetic curve, so arithmetic scheme of dimension 1 in points. So then first you make this X itself regular, and then you care for the divisor's normal crossings. You separate this until in the end it only meets one component and this component transversely. Okay, so this is just for record. So, I mean, this theorem then is unconditional. So for Q equals 1, and of course also for Q equals 0. So, but for Q equals 0, and say the only difficult case is R equals D, because the other things you get by a projective bundle formula. So, if R is D and S is 0, then you get Chow groups here, modulo L to the nu, and you get the corresponding Etal Komolchi group. And then this is the usual class field theory, which is known, and over finite fields. And so this result, I mean, the observation that one can use RES1 to get one further, you get something for H2D minus 1 with a D twist. And more interesting is the theorem 2, which is not completely written up, but so this is in the works. RES 2 prime and RES 2 double prime hold. This is the joint work with Kosa and Saito. And I want to explain a little bit the strategy, how you get at this. So the method is heavily based on, of course, results of Hironaka and a theory which is maybe not so well known. So Hironaka's theory, a part of from the theory that anyway he is in this Ennis paper, which then in many aspects is more general and speaks just for about arbitrary rings and resolving them. But in the end, he has to restrict to characteristic zero. But a lot of this is general. But there's another series of papers, so of associated polyhedra. I want to explain at least how this comes into the picture. So strategy, what is in general the strategy? So this is already due to Zariski. I mean, let's say for surfaces, two-dimensional schemes, and this goes back to Zariski and is actually what he applied in his Ennis papers, in which sort of maybe also it's not so well known that in fact I mean one of these papers or maybe even two he describes this kind of desingularization, but in one of the papers at least he describes this really by blowing up in regular centers. So that's exactly what we do here, but he does this over algebraically closed fields. So how can this look? I mean, so surface singularities, so for example something like this, and where the singular locus is a curve, but of course this can be worse, so let's see, so maybe like this. And And apparently this is even more singular here. So this point P, you have this graph. So the singular locus itself is singular. And you have the point where it's sort of especially singular. And then the idea is blow up the worst inverse singularity. And I mean, there's a problem about this doing this in higher dimension, in fact, but I mean, at least for surface, this seems to work also in the general case. So this would be P here, so in the point. And then C becomes regular. Yeah, because as I said, I mean, blowing up the whole thing in P means the strict transform of C means you blow up in this point P, and that's exactly means you desingularize C as spelled here. And then you can blow up C. Then blow up C, which is then regular, and if then you have such a situation, and then it's somehow just, in some sense, a family version of blowing up curves in points. Okay, that's the idea. Yeah. That's of course also in Hironaka's proof. The whole thing, I mean, to do something locally and then organize everything by some procedure, which is more or less like a flow chart, I mean, of a computer program, sort of what you should do next after you have done one step of blowing up. Okay, but this can be done, and the point is how to control this is you have to find invariance of singularities. This is, of course, also known to the experts. Okay, so as I said, Sarisky made this, by this method, treated the surfaces over, so we call this, so surfaces over algebraically closed fields. By this method. Then Hironaka, there's sort of an appendix to some other paper notes taken by somebody else, sketch. Anyway, he's provided a sketch for hypersurfaces. In an ambient three-dimensional variety. So this is over a field. But there were some, anyway, this is not very detailed, but then there's really a gap there. And Kossar, an old paper, made some complements. So if this, everything is fine if the ground field is algebraically closed, but some complements for non-trivial residue extensions in blow-ups. So it may be that you blow up a point if the ground field is not algebraically closed, or anyway, if you are over some arithmetic scheme. And then the point, closed point lying above this has a non-trivial residue extension. And in particular, this residue extension may be inseparable, and that creates a lot of problems. So based on this somehow, on all these things, our plan is to really make a detailed proof of this two-dimensional case without any restriction. I mean, not a ground field, and Kossar also already works more generally for local rings. Okay, so now I will explain. The ingredients are so, as I said, what one needs are invariants for singularities. Yeah, to measure what a bad singularity is and what and to see if the process of blowing up makes things better. So, and I think the main starting observation is for R, a Noetherian local ring, maximal ideal N, and there's a well-known criterion in commutative algebra, then R is regular if and only if you take the associated graded ring. So I call this GRU MR. And you have a surjection from this, from the SIM, the tensor algebra, symmetric algebra on M modulo M squared, which is really a polynomial ring. Where N, of course, now is the dimension of M modulo M squared, which might not be the dimension of X, that's the whole problem. But, I mean, you can see it if and only if this is an isomorphism. It's an isomorphism. So maybe call this phi. And, of course, this graded algebra is then kernel, I mean, is x1 to xn modulo I, where this is the kernel of phi. Okay, so this is something one comes to study. Suddenly, just algebras which are quotients of polynomial ring in this sense. And there are invariants in this situation. And in fact, the first essential invariants of singularities are just defined in terms of this graded algebra. So, first, invariants of graded rings. And in fact, so here, K is the field. Of course, here K here is the residue field. So and so let I in polynomial ring be an ideal, and then Iwanaka proves the following in his paper. So A, there exist elements phi 1 until some element phi m in I, phi I homogeneous of degree nu I, such as the following holds. There are many different ways to state this lemma. Maybe this is the fastest without any theory. So they are ordered. Increasingly or non-decreasing, so way. Second thing is you do it somehow the minimum necessary, so phi I is not in phi 1 in the previous ideal generated by the previous ones, and in fact you can start like this. And until you find that you have enough and you generate the whole ideal. Yeah, homogeneous ideal. Thank you. So which is the case for the kernel of phi, of course, yeah. I guess this is what it is, but I must confess that I don't know what the Kirchner basis is. You know this, Yosho?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then, but the main point here is this tuple u1, um, is independent of the choices. So any such procedure would give the same. And yeah, so nu star of this ideal is then this family. You take the nus and then you add infinities up to, until infinity. So then this would one would call nu 1 of I 2 and so on. It's called maybe I just call it here, so, but in the local ring situation it will be anyway called the Hilbert-Sahmel invariant of I. Okay, so you can make a canonical, I mean, this depends on I and the being a sub-ideal of a certain polynomial ring. You could fix the situation here to get some invariant in the Noetherian local ring case where you have a canonical way somehow there. And anyway, if you have two different presentations, it's not so difficult to come from one invariant to the other. So I don't want to bother about this so much. And at least what I know from the literature, I know in particular Hironaka, is called a standard basis. Of I. Actually, I think the Grüttner basis is something like normalized, so-called normalized standard base. I don't want to go into this. Okay, then furthermore, there's another invariant, another lemma due to Hironaka. There exists a minimal K subspace T inside the degree one part of the polynomial ring, which is, of course, just the direct sum of the the free vector space on this basis, vector space on this basis, such that I is generated by elements in KT, and KT is just sim T. I mean, the polynomial ring is sim of this whole space. Yeah, this is the polynomial ring. And now your sim T means just, for example, you could think that T is given by the first R elements here, and then you have the polynomial ring on the first R elements, which is standing here embedded in the polynomial ring with the N generated by the N elements. So sim T. So in other words, so we get the following. So we have, in maybe better to see this geometrically. So this is the affine space, which is spec of k x1 to xn, and in the there is a spec of k x1 xn modulo I, and then somehow a further quotient is given by this ideal. So this is spec of kxi modulo sum t, or k of t, well, actually the idea generated by T. And this is, let's say, of dimension A n k n minus r, where r is equal to the dimension of T. So this is the smallest affine subspace, yeah, of ANK. I mean this one here is the smallest affine subspace in AN contained in this, and this is the cone. I mean speck of a homogeneous algebra has a cone structure, so it's in this cone C. Largest. Contained in this C. Okay, and this dimension here is another invariant. This dimension n minus r. So this largest affine subspace that I described there is called the directrix. Directrix. And we will see. So this is called directrix. And the dimension of the E of I, which is this n minus r, which is the dimension of this directrix. This is another invariant. So we have the Hilbert-Samuel invariant, and we have this invariant. And also define E I K as the corresponding invariant E of I tensor K, of course, inside the polynomial ring K x1 to xn. For field extension. So then again, Hironaka. So this can grow and this but E I K is equal EI if K over small k is separable. So, and this is, the occurrence of inseparable extensions makes problems in the resolution of singularities in characteristic P, and this is one of the problems. This invariant can suddenly jump and go up, get higher, which is not so good. So then I come to the invariance for the local ring. And this is not very easy. It's just the invariance of the associate graded. And I'm cheating a little bit, but I mean it's not so difficult. It's also such a problem. So invariance for local rings. So let R, with maximal ideal, be a local Noetherian ring. And then we have, as before, M R. And write this as above as KXN to XN, really this canonical N, I mean the dimension of the tangent space, if you like, modulo I. And then nu star of R is defined as the nu star of this I. So in fact, there might be some other things. If the R, for example, is a quotient, so maybe this is a problem of notations now, but I mean, let's just say you have some surjection where this is a J, and this is regular of dimension D, then you might also want to write this as then you have a surjection also from the associated greater ring of R0, which is then a polynomial ring in D variables, modulo some other ideal I prime. And then you, in fact, in this embedded resolution, Hironaka rather considers the invariant for I prime, but it's not so difficult to come from one to the other. That's just for the sort of imagination, do it like this. And this is defined as E of IK. Okay, or small k. Okay, and this is, of course, now the accessible field. So this is the invariant, and now we come to a more global version of schemes. So now let X be a Noetherian scheme. Excellent scheme. Simplicity. And for X, point of X, let then new X star of capital X, of course, be the invariant of the local ring. And similarly, EX also E of OXX and K, some extension, and this is here the residue field X. And I want to point out that maybe I could have done this before. This is always at most the dimension of the local ring, because this is still here. I mean, these are schemes, and all the tangents, although the tangent space of this one might be bigger, but I mean, this cone, of course, has the dimension of the local ring, and so so this has the most dimension, the local ring. Okay. And then a theorem, very important result of Hironaka, is the following. So for any given tuple of non-negative numbers, which somehow agrees, and might be infinite, in some, in the end, or will be infinite, the set of X and X, where this Hilbert-Samuel invariant equal to nu, so this is called, so the set of all these X where this holds is the Hilbert-Samuel locus for nu is constructible. So that means a finite union of locally closed subsets. Okay, so this is a very important result. So one has a kind of verification by the Hilbert-Samuel loci. It's not the case, there are some counterexamples in a global setting that it's not so that you bound the knew somehow that the set where this is smaller than or equal to this new is closed, something like this. It's not true, but okay, anyway. So now again, let X be as above. So let let D X be permissible closed subscheme. So these are the things that Hironaka likes to blow up in. So that means D is regular and normally flat. And normally flat means if you, so you have this ideal of D, so then these all are flat, flat OD modules. Okay, so this is a technical condition, but anyway, this is regular. Then Hironaka, again, maybe this is, should write this really a theorem. So, first of all, you have, okay, so maybe this is not so difficult, so the theorem comes below. So you have the tangent space in X, X is some point. So tangent space in D is inside this directrix, which I do for this local ring, and which is in the cone, and this was what I wrote for C. And this, as we have seen, is in the tangent space of X itself. Okay? So this is spec of mx oxx. Okay, and all the other things are explained. And then the crucial result of Hironaka is that one has nice behavior in blow under blow-ups in such D. So let pi blow up of x in D, so I'll call this x prime, I should have called this x tilde, be the blow up, and x prime in capital X prime in the blow up above X. So then the first thing is that the invariant does not get worse. So Hilbert-Sommer invariant. At most nu star X, and this is in lexicographic order. Okay, then if now there comes this theory which is already sort of invented by Zariski, if X prime is near to X, that means equality holds. You see, if this decreases, then you have a nice way. I mean, then you said, okay, the Hilbert-Sommer invariant goes down and it's getting better and better. And in the end, it's basically all infinity. I mean, then this is a regular case. So equality holds in one. Then the secondary invariant, E x prime of x prime, for any k, unfortunately, so this is a problem. For all field extension k over the residual field k prime. And this, of course, sits over k of x. Yeah? And so that E x prime, is again non-increasing if k of x over k x prime over k of x is separable. That's important. You see, here one sees that where the characteristic p produces a possible problem or actual problem. No, this is after some base extension, for all base extension above k. So you can only conclude that the ex prime x prime is smaller than exx after base change to k of x prime. And this might be, if I write k, capital K equal to k of x prime, then this might be bigger than this one. This is the prime. The k makes a difference here.
There's no phase change in the parenthetic.
No, though, this is no prime. This is prime, no prime. Prime, no prime. So, any separable, in fact, that doesn't matter. But one, mainly uses this for fine separable. So, then, moreover, if x prime is near 2x, and if now comes the second place where the characteristic plays a role. This is zero, or characteristic of the series field is at least the dimension of OXX. Then the point is that a priori, the X prime, we want to make things better. So, the x prime should have better invariance. So we have to look at all the invariants where the invariant is not better. So at all near points. These are the problematic points. And now Hironaka tells you that it's not anywhere in the fiber, but in a very small locus. Then x prime is in the projective space associated to the directrix, basically. And you can also mod out by D. So this is inside the porch of the graded ring divided by the polynomial ring. Divided out by Tx of D. I think this is obvious what I mean by this. This is would be the exceptional fiber for the blow up. So usually this is much bigger. This has a bigger dimension, and the hope is that the directrix has very small dimension. So for example, if D is a point, that let's say we are in a local situation, we have a closed point, then X prime is just in the projective space of the directrix. So if E X of X is zero, then this is empty here. So no X prime is near, right? And if E X of X is one, unique, only one point, because then projective space over one dimensional space is a point. So there's only one x prime. So that makes things easy in this case. So these are easy cases. Okay, I have to finish, but let me just write down the... So these easy cases. Completely trivial. And for dimension x equals 2, the case where the directrix has dimension 2 is difficult. And now here comes the case of polyhedra, and I will be just... So then you have something, you order the local parameters, like y1 to yr, and then you have two parameters u2, so these generate the ideal of directrix, and these are coordinates for the directrix. Okay, and what you then do is you write down your given ideal, which was actually this J. It's generated by functions f1 to fn, say, or fr, maybe. And then you write down the fi as sum in these invariants here. So a, b, c, I, a, b. And you have u to the a, which is, of course, u1, a1, u2, a2, and similarly, uy to the b. And then the polyhedron you form is roughly, just want to give you the idea, very roughly. The polyhedron, not at all true what I write, but delta f depends on all these choices, the fi, the y's, and u's, is the convex hull of occurring a1, a2, so only the a1, a2 meta, in R2. And then this is something like, here's A1, here's A2, and you have a lot of points here, and yeah, then you form the convex hull. Oops, it's not convex. And then the problem is, since all the, in the case of very near points, I mean, then the Hilbert-Samuel invariants are equal, and also the E's are equal. So no way to see if you can get better. And then you have to need the polyhedron, so study behavior of polyhedron under blow up. So this is a difficult thing. And then to deduce blowing up process must stop. So you are already somehow in the situation which cannot exist, or that means it is regular. That's basically the strategy, and this was outlined by Hironaka, and I mean, these are additional invariants which cannot be given by just one invariant, but it's the behavior of a whole geometric object somehow. Okay, thank you very much. Well, that's actually what I now do in my evenings. I should mention, I mean, I heard only now that Hironaka actually announced resolution of singularities in arbitrary dimension, so I don't know what he's doing. In fact, this might be a different approach, and maybe the one which works in the higher dimensional case, which is somehow, maybe he found that this is too rigid to look at, and he has the so-called idealistic exponents, and I see, but I don't know this theory very well. And so I don't know. I mean, of course, this would be very nice. For the three-dimensional case, if one tries to follow this idea, then there are various problems that I know very well now in the three-dimensional case, and we are just studying Okay, so to study this polyhedron and the behavior, you want to somehow have another invariants which are now geometric. So Hironaka takes the following. He takes the minimal A1, which he calls alpha 1, And then this point, which has a beta 2, I would now call it. He just calls it alpha and beta. And now he studies somehow that this somehow goes down. So in the end, what one gets that somehow this can move somehow back and forth and so on, but in the end this becomes rectangular. And once it becomes rectangular, then the blow up would always sort of put it either down there in, or there. So it reaches this, and then one has achieved everything. And these nice invariants, now consider now a three-dimensional polyhedron. And it's not so simple just to take this side and this side and the analogs, and you have many, many faces which are somehow in three dimension, very complicated thing. And at least in a moment I cannot see what a blow up, I mean, I can. There are some things one can achieve, but then sort of the difficult thing is, so in this case the directrix has dimension 3, so this is a two-dimensional projective space, and you have the points where you could have this x prime is described sort of, the basic cases are something like this, like this, and the third case, and you have different charts if you blow up, and then that means basically that the behavior in this three-dimensional situation, one of the coordinates is distinguished. Something happens. So something happens here for the A1, for the A2, and for the A3. But the mixing, sort of, that's very difficult to see. I mean, so you get some one invariant straight, and then comes the other blow up and spoils everything. So that's not achieved. Yeah, so it seems. So it seems. No. Yeah. I mean, but we have not, I mean, this. There's some obstacle with these invariants. And one idea would be to do something like a geometric invariant, just pass through the separable closure or something. Inseparable hull, I mean. So, but then is at least by this method there's the problem that you lose the generators, the generators would become some others and so on. So, and you cannot come down maybe to actual generators of the ideal. So, but that might be a possibility.
So what do you think you're not explained?
You told me, so Yeah. I mean, this method, as I said, I mean, if it works, then it equally gives this good position with respect to a divisor with normal crossings. And in fact, in some sense, you can, this is even better in some sense with a divisor, because this is a God-given thing. You can take a relative directrix with respect to this divisor, and in fact, somehow it could even be better controlled, but so I don't know.
Any other questions? Thank you.